No, you're on your mic.
No, I mean, is the show all over?
Oh, no, you're okay.
Fill these seats.
As you're waiting, I'm marveled at how you can sit like that. How do you cultivate that ability?
Just doing it all my life. Also, I have these remarkably bendy knees. I don't. I think your knees either do it or they don't.
And maybe practice so that you can become easier.
I also think if you keep doing it, you keep pliable.
That's the easiest way for you to sit, or cross-legged is the easiest way to sit?
This is the easiest way for me to sit, kind of Japanese seiza style. It's completely comfortable for me. I sit long enough, my feet will fall asleep. More comfortable than a chair for me.
It's supposed to be very good for your blood vessels and legs and, you know, varicose veins and whatnot to just sit like that.
I think so, I hope so. Closer, if you don't mind. We'll try not to block Chuck with this camera, but be a little more intimate. Thank you. Okay, Chuck? Sufism, we sit in a circle. We sit in a circle to emphasize our unity. The Sufi circle is called a halka, a ring. The ring is it's the symbol of our commitment to one another. In this ring, we're bound, as in a marriage, to sharing of an experience. So a Sufi community is also called a halka, a ring, because of what's shared among them. in this halka, which is formed for spiritual practice, the halka forms the boundaries of a ritual space. And we enter such a ritual space intentionally with an invocation. The invocation of the Anayati Sutras was taught to us by Hazrat Anaya Khan and can be done in the following way. So if you put your hands out and right hand over the chest, left hand over the right hand, right thumb over left thumb, spread the wings of the winged heart. Lift your head to the sky, and as it comes down, say, "This is not my body." I'm going to change the line, the second line, just a little bit. Take your chin to your left shoulder, and as your head drifts across your chest, say, "This is the temple of the heart." So in this way, we create an inner sacred atmosphere, a ritual atmosphere, creating the right context for doing spiritual practice. And the primary practice of the Sufis, of course, is dhikr, which means remembrance. Dhikr, or zikr, just the Arabic and the Farsi pronunciations. Practice of remembrance of divinity, remembrance of what is sacred, remembering the divine within. the remembrance is usually through the use of a sacred phrase or word, the name Allah, or one of the other divine names, one of the 99 beautiful names. But the most sacred phrase for Sufis, of course, is La ilaha illallah. There is no God but God. Now, of course, you know, this will be familiar, you know, as the great creedal statement of Islam. The Shahada, Kalima. Shahada meaning testimony. And in that context, it means what it says. There's no God but God. Meaning, all those other things that are thought of as God are not God. There's only one God. And it was a great statement of monotheism arising in a polytheistic context. In Arabia in the time, and when this message came through, Arabia was a polytheistic culture. Each tribe had its own god. Each location had a deity associated with it. And this represented, this monotheistic idea represented a great advance in that it unified a people that were divided by their gods. They were divided by each having an individual god that they thought were in competition. And the message became very clear that there was a unifying God that was over all, and there was no God but this God. But of course, it's revelation. There are layers upon layers of meaning in it. This basic layer was what was presented as the message to most of the people. But there was a deeper message of that spoke to an experience where there is nothing but divinity. And that's another way of interpreting the words, La ilaha illallah. Nothing but divinity exists. There is only divinity. Sufis will also look at this basic phrase, La ilaha illallah, in a very specific way, breaking the verse into two parts. La ilaha, there is no God. Period. Semicolon. There's no God. And this is to speak to a basic fact of our experience. That wherever we look, whether under a microscope or through a telescope, we don't find God. We don't find God. God is not out behind the moon, not out behind the solar system. We don't find that God. The God, you know, that was once understood to be something like you find in Michelangelo's painting on the Sistine Chapel, on the ceiling, a great bearded God looking over the universe. We've looked into the universe and we don't find that God. And so, La ilaha, there's no God, represents that aspect of our experience that can look at the objective universe and not find it anywhere. In the material universe of science, no God. So, in this way, and from this perspective, Sufis are also Buddhist. No God. Semicolon. It's only half the statement. The other half of the statement says, illallah, which doesn't have to be read, but God. Can also be read, nevertheless, God. So So there is no God, nevertheless God. Speaking to a basic paradox of our experience. Speaking to that feeling that we often can't escape. I look around, I don't find God. It's painful to not find God. And yet I can't escape an inner testimony, an inner shahada, that speaks to me and says, there's something. Even if I haven't had a personal experience of divinity or of the sacred, I'm longing for it. There's a longing for something other, something greater, something deeper, something more rich. And so, even if we try to maintain a scientific, objective mind, something within us is always itching for something more, something greater. And for some of us, it's more than that. There's an actual testimony, an experience of something that feels sacred. And we have to hold this uneasy marriage of not finding God in the external world and yet having an experience of something sacred that we can't deny. Which is to say, which is a thing that we often call faith. Faith, the testimony of things unseen. Faith, which the philosopher Martin Buber liked to call holy insecurity. Faith is holy insecurity. Meaning it's an insecure knowledge. It's a knowledge I can't rid myself of, but which I can't demonstrate to you. I can't prove it to you. But I can't deny it to myself. So faith or holy insecurity is that which I can't prove, and yet which I can't deny to myself. We have these experiences, and we have to hold them in this kind of insecure way. So, La ilaha illallah speaks to that paradox of our existence as spiritual seekers, having an inner testimony that we can't prove, and having an experience of the world which is difficult. We long for an external God, God with whom we can relate externally. This is the great phrase of Sufism and Islam. And in every Sufi lineage, in every Sufi order, there's a particular way of using this phrase, particular movements associated with it, particular melodies that are used, even particular pronunciations. And in each order, it tends to be very distinct. In the Chishti lineage, there's a very specific way of doing the dhikr practice. And this lineage, this Anayati lineage, is Chishti Anayati, and we still follow this basic practice. And in the Chishti Anayati approach to dhikr, the phrase is now broken into four parts, not just the two. There's no God, nevertheless God. And there are four movements associated with it. And they speak this basic message. The movements speak the message that I was just describing. Head to the left shoulder, and then just falling across the chest, letting the weight of your head and body carry you across it, up, looking upward. This is the external search. La ilaha. And the result, There is no God. This is looking out into the universe and expressing an almost plaintive cry. There's no God. There's a poignance to that search. We're human beings. We're beings that are expressive and relational. We live in relation. And to search for that God and not find that God is painful. And it's the story of a good part of our lives. La ilaha, there's no God. That's a lot of our story. The pain of that search, that external search. La ilaha, there's no God. Nevertheless. With nevertheless, in, we drop inward. After the pain of the external search, to then make a movement that drops inward. I mean, we're driven to that. We're driven to that by the pain of the external search. Drives us inward. And this is where we discover something, nevertheless. And what do we discover when we go inside? A third movement. La. God. We spend all this time in the external search looking for God. Painfully looking for God. It drives us inward where we discover La, God. And that going inward, and when we look inside, we find that there's an entire world in there. More vast, maybe. I don't know if I can say that. Is it more vast than the external universe? We don't know what the external universe is either. Equally vast, inside. And yet, we can know the terrain of the internal universe in a way we can't know the terrain of the external universe. We think we can map out here, so well. But there's a kind of intimacy to the way we can map inside. It's richer, more powerful. And in there, we discover something. We discover God. But I want to qualify it. I want to say that the God that we begin to discover inside when we turn inward in this contemplative act, turning inward and finding out who we are inside. And in the exaltation of that discovery, we throw our heads up and say, La, God. I want to say, it's not quite God. What we're discovering there is what, I believe what we're discovering there is what Hazrat Inayat Khan would call the God ideal. Our own vision of divinity at whatever stage of development we might be at, for us, what does divinity look like there? We've gone inward, and we do discover God, but it's our God ideal. So where do we really discover God? I think it's in the fourth part. So, starting over here. La ilaha. There's no God searching the external universe. Driving us inward. La, God, God ideal. Then finally, the head drops down almost in exhaustion, but really just magnetically pulled to the heart. It's a very gentle movement. It drops down and gently to the left, just barely. Magnetically drawn to the heart. And we say, who? Ooh. That resonant vibration of who is the vibration that awakens the heart, that knocks on the door of the heart, which opens on divinity. It's only in the heart that we discover divinity, true divinity, an experience of it. Now, hu is an interesting word in Arabic, because it means he. And yet, paradoxically, it is code in Sufism for the divine presence, which is to say, the experiential presence of God, the feminine presence. So he actually means she in some sense. We say hu, but it's code in Sufism for the divine feminine, the feminine presence of divinity. It's in the vibration. The feminine is in vibration. So the heart is where we actually have an experience. And it's not until we've had an experience that we're finding divinity. What we found in here was something sacred, but it's still the God idea. The idea of the dhikr practice is to go on that journey of discovering an actual experience, not just the God idea. It's to cultivate an experience where we can meet God. I was saying yesterday that I was quoting Murshid Sam, saying, and he paraphrasing Al-Ghazali, Sufism is a school of experience, not dogmas. Sufism has its teachings, has its practices, but it does not tell you what to believe. It is to cultivate personal experience, to cultivate a genuine experience from which you will learn what to believe, what to do, but it will come from inside. The teachings on the outside are merely to support finding your own experience, discovering your own God ideal, and then the actual experience of the divine. So we do this practice to cultivate or lay the groundwork or the foundation for discovering something. And so maybe we can do it together. There are various ways of doing dhikr. Vocal dhikr, it's called dhikr jari, dhikr out loud. And we'll do it this way first, in 99 times using the tasbih, which could be translated something like tool of glorification, tool for glorifying God. And so just follow me with trying out the movements again. It might be easiest to do if you come to the edge of your chair a little bit. And in order to not make it hard on your neck, use your shoulders. You know, bend at the waist and use your shoulders. Bring your whole shoulders into it. Some people, they emphasize the neck too much, and sometimes this can be hard on them. So come forward a little bit. Turn your chin to your left shoulder and let's just do the movement. Feeling the weight of your head take you down and let the momentum take you back over your right shoulder and up till you're looking at the ceiling. And again, do this from your core to make it easy. Laila. Then we'll drop down, drop your chin into your chest. Illa, and you can lean forward. Nevertheless. And then up in exaltation of what you discover. La. And then as if slowly, magnetically drawn to the heart. And the words are done with aspiration. Emphasizing the breath in them. But when you come to the who, make it resonant. Remember, it's that vibration that awakens the heart, that knocks on the door of the heart again, which opens upon divinity. Who. So take your chin to your left shoulder and we'll begin. La. Drop down. Il. La. Up in exaltation. And into the heart. Hu. La. Il. La. Hu. La. Il.
Love. La ilaha illallah. La ilaha illallah. La ilaha illallah.
Yeah.
Laila illa la hu. 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 Laila illa la hu.
Laila illa la hu. What happens inside? The movements fall away. Sometimes even the words fall away. your lips stop moving. Not necessarily, but often this happens. And yet the process keeps going. Keeps turning. Liquor creates a flywheel in consciousness. Once you get it spinning, it keeps spinning. And that's part of the technology of it. It helps us go from remembering to remembrance. One aspect of the good is remembering. It's an activity. It's a process that we're engaging, that we're doing consciously. Allah, 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 Allah. I'm pushing that. I'm engaging that. I'm saying, this is what I want to remember. I want to remember this. I want to remember this. I want to remember this. But that's merely the activity. That's merely remembering. What we want to get to is remembrance, where we moved from actively remembering to being in remembrance. It's happening to us. The process is engaged. We've created the flywheel in consciousness so that now I'm just in remembrance. I'm no longer having to do an activity. It's no longer my intention to remember God. God is just being remembered. And that's what happens over time. And that's why we do dhikr long enough to engage that automatic mechanism that will turn on in us. And often to do it long enough so that when we leave the ritual space, we continue to be in remembrance. So that when we're in the world, we remember divinity as it's standing right in front of us, sometimes in an annoying personage. And we remember. So, dhikr is both a practice and then what happens in the practice, what it cultivates. I also like to think of this as a layered practice. There are a lot of dimensions to the Chishti Dhikr, and we talked about the four parts of it and the journey it describes. The poignant journey of going on an external search for God and not finding God.
La ilaha.
There is no God. And the pain of that. The pain of the external search for God that drives us inward. Nevertheless, here inside, in my interior world, I then discover something. And in my exaltation, I'm lifted up and I celebrate my God ideal, La God. And then we anchor that in the heart with the vibration of the Hu. It settles in the heart. Hu. 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 We have an experience of the Divine Feminine, the Feminine Presence that's in the vibration that settles in the heart. So that's one part, or one aspect of the Chishti Anayati Dhikr. But then even with that, we have to realize that we're doing many things at once. And on the first level of the Dhikr, prior even to the words, is the gift of our forebears who created this form. The first Chishtis to do this, who knows when. This movement from the left shoulder up over the right shoulder up to the sky. And then dropping down. Lifting up. Exaltation, and then this gentle movement toward the heart, magnetically drawn to the heart. Look at that. That's spiral, drops down into his center, lifts up, goes back up on that pole, and then makes this gentle movement. It's almost like Arabic calligraphy. Who knows what it writes? This beautiful movement. You know, it's like a choreographed prayer dance for God. This is the body's prayer. For Chishtianity Sufis, this is the prayer of the body. Just to do that, mindfully, aware of your body, it's enough. It's enough by itself. That's a definite layer of the practice. So, if you lose the words at some point and you find that your body's just doing this, or you can't hold the meanings at a certain point, this is enough. How often do we actually pray with our bodies? Just pray with our bodies. And so that's the base layer. Onto that, we can add a second layer, which is
La ilaha illa hu.
The words that came from revelation that are found in the Quran al-Karim, the generous Quran. These are the words we were taught, that we were, it's believed, given by God to connect back to God. An essential message. There is nothing but divinity. Where there is no God, nevertheless, God is. And so we layer on the words.
La ilaha illa.
So that's the second layer. But maybe, I don't know, maybe you're better than me. You quickly discover that you can say the words and forget them at the same time. I'm saying them, but I'm off in the shopping mall. Or I'm off in the next day. Or I'm thinking about the conversation last night with my partner or whatever. I'm not here, yet I'm saying the words. One of the great discoveries of meditation. You can be doing the process and not present at all. And so we add the third layer of attention. Holding the words, not just saying them. It's an actual activity. You have to grab the tail of them.
La ilaha illa.
Oh, I think I got off there. But, you know, we have a practice called sama, hearing, listening. The thing here, the trick here, is to hear yourself say the words, to not just say them, but to hear them as if they're being spoken externally, almost.
La ilaha illahu.
We're used to speaking externally for others to hear. But we can speak in such a way that we hear the words that we're uttering. In this case, we are at least one part of the audience for these particular words.
La ilaha illallah.
I want me to hear them. And so that's the third part of the layering. Speaking to yourself. Allowing yourself to hear what you're saying. And that's the way to hold the words without holding too tightly. You know, you can effort too much in this. You can try to hold too hard. But if you actually just listen to to the words you're saying. It's a way of holding without trying to hold too tightly. We try to hold anything too tight and we lose it. But just listen. The fourth layer that we can add is meaning. And that's where we go back to the journey. La ilaha. There is no God. Remembering again the pain of the external search, which is most of our spiritual journey, not being able to connect externally with the God that we want to connect with, and how that hurts, squeezes the heart, and allowing yourself to feel that. Maybe that's a fifth layer, really. The fourth layer is, what are the meaning of these words? There's no God. Especially, most of us here are probably not Arabic speakers, a few of us. So these words are already being translated. Even if they're not, there should be a private meaning associated. There's no God. So there's a zikr that's happening that's la ilaha, there's no God. Nevertheless, God is, or God's presence. It could be a private translation that you're layering on there. And as I said, and maybe a fifth level, the feeling that goes with these words, the poignant hurt of the external search that drives you inward, inside, being held in the womb of our own internal experience. And then actually allowing yourself to feel an exaltation of discovery of what is my God ideal? It looks like this. And even with this movement, do this with me. Allow yourself to go in, drop down. Now inhale and lift up. Throw your head back. Can you feel it? There's a natural feeling that comes from that. Allow for it. Allow space for that. There's an expansion with it. And it's the feeling of expansion, but also discovery. Opening to the world. Opening to the universe. And then settling in the heart again. So, dhikr is really a layered process. And I want to say, if at any point you find yourself just doing one of those things, it's great. We put too much of a trip on ourselves about doing meditation perfectly. If you're sitting down and doing it at all, you've already accomplished something. Even if you sat down in your meditation spot, you know, for 30 minutes and drifted the whole time, you still sat there for a purpose. You put yourself in that spot. That's step one. Keep accomplishing that for a long time. And then start to build in tension. But if you're just doing the body prayer, great. If you're just doing, there's no God. Nevertheless, God is. You can only do it in English. Great. But if you can layer it all together and get the emotion together, you can see what the package can be. It can be a tremendous experience. But you will lose it. We cannot hold these things. You may get the whole thing together, three or four beads, and then it will drop off. Don't give yourself a hard time about it. Find where you're at in it again. Slowly build up to layering the full thing. Pirvalaya talked about spiritual practices as